I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and this is Radio versus the Martians.
Okay, so I wanted to throw something out there, and this is based on a discussion I've had at work and a couple discussions I've had since the discussion at work. And it's a position that I hold that I fear I may be alone in, because even just talking about this hypothetically with people from a fictional perspective, I have yet to find another person who, like me, would choose immortality if it was an option, because I think the trope of the sad, mopey guy in the long coat who just walks through eternity while everyone dies around him and he's really sad about it is utter horseshit. So am I alone in this with thinking that if given an opportunity, it would be awesome to live for 3, 4, 5, 7, 1,000 years?
Well, anybody else before I go first?
I like all the options you just listed, but I wouldn't want to live more than 10,000 years as far as I know. So like if I had a commitment to, like,
so the entire history of the human race is enough for you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I'm just not convinced. I'm convinced that a lot of people who get into the whole, oh, I'm sad because all my friends died thing, which is, by the way, the same thing that happens when you live a normal lifespan.
Yeah.
Where you will live to see your people die. You'll live to see your parents die. You will live to see older relatives die. If you're lucky enough and you probably have a better diet than I do,
right,
you
yeah.
will live to see your peers die. I just don't, I'm not convinced that, one, you're incapable of making other friends at some point in the future after a proper mourning period, but also that there isn't a bunch of really interesting stuff that would easily take your time up if you lived a couple thousand years. And people going, oh, well, I'd run out of things and I'd want to die is the thing I keep hearing over and over again, and I just don't buy it. I just don't buy this idea, because it's like, really, with all the things in the world that you can do that you don't get to do in a regular lifespan, that you wouldn't say, like, okay, I'm going to spend the next 50 years being a pilot.
How do you feel about this, Casey?
It's like you're almost exploding with your just...
I want to get it right.
Oh, no, I think all I'll say about this is, I think those particular stories, if they're through, like, the lens of a vampire, they're about the horrible things you need to do to stay to be an immortal, which is that you need to suck. You need to do some horrific shit.
And you can't go in the sunshine. You can't go in the sunshine anymore. And you've got
all these vulnerabilities.
Barely go out in the sunshine now.
Yeah.
You need to be a villain, essentially, to be there. No. I mean,
you may be hunted down by Wesley Snipes.
That's what it comes down to me, is what are the requirements that in order for you to stay, you know, and to keep your immortality? I mean, do you continue aging as a normal human being? Because I don't know if I could handle 20,000 years looking like the Crypt Keeper.
No. Let's just give us the typical, like, Highlander type rules, Doctor Who type rules. The
Highlander sort of rules apply.
Where you as a character will essentially remain 30 to 40.
Okay.
For a long time, that you'll be at your physical peak.
I'll never lose this weight.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Let's just say you can change your physique. If you want to be a weightlifter for 100 years, you could.
All right.
Like, if you wanted to do a job later in what would have been a normal lifespan, like,
sure,
say, I want to be a doctor, you always have enough time to go do that.
Right.
You can always learn a highly technical career. I can be a scientist for a few decades.
Well, yeah, because if you're immortal, you may go a few billion years, in which case you got to leave Earth. And if you're allergic to sunshine, that's going to be very difficult for space travel.
Yes.
when you don't have this nice planetary body blocking your sunlight for you. Has anybody ever really gone into the physics of, you know, how stupid vampires are? I'm sure there's a book out there. Vampires are stupid by somebody fake PhD.
Would you get a little hurt by all of the stars, for instance, if there's not a lot of light pollution to block that
right
out?
you feel itchy, you get a little rash.
Do vampires require a stratosphere? Like, yeah, exactly what components of the atmosphere are required in order to block sunlight during the night? Like nitrogen?
Yeah.
You know, if you could turn nitrogen into a metal and you just walk around in a nitrogen tie.
I think that, you know, take the vampire weaknesses out of it, which I think would make you a little grumpy.
Yeah, probably.
I think taking, if you're just going to be a character like, say, the Doctor.
Yeah, no more burritos. That would be a bummer.
The Doctor is over 2,000 years old in the series at this point.
Sure.
He hasn't run out of things to do.
Yeah.
Or places to go, and I imagine that at some point, if you live long enough, you will get to travel in space. And
well, this is part of it is why I once identified as a transhumanist is I liked the idea of becoming essentially.
I really thought you were going to say something totally different just there.
What,
but
what now?
No,
Scientologist?
Go on.
No, what were you, I want to know.
I don't know. I thought maybe you were going to invent your own particular gender identity that had to do with being a doctor.
Oh.
Because that's probably a thing, right?
Yeah.
Continue.
Wait, is doctor a gender now?
Doctor Who?
I'm a trans Gallifreyan?
Yeah.
is that it?
Yes.
I wouldn't mind that at all. That would be fairly good because you maintain a sense of personal identity, where with transhumanism that may actually become, the way we talk about uploading and stuff like that, that could actually become a problem.
Because I've had people say, speaking to the Doctor Who thing, that the only reason that the Doctor doesn't want to die is that he gets to be different people,
mm-hmm.
effectively, where there's sort of a main like foundation of who he is with other different things built on top of it.
I've talked to people who've lost, you know, who get old and lose all their friends, and one thing that's sort of in the background is that they are definitely sad that they're losing all their friends. These are the people they built their life with, and now they're gone. But they also don't really, because they themselves are getting on, you know, getting older, they don't really have the opportunity to make new ones. Because you're never going to make connections that deep with anyone ever again, because you don't have time. You got, you know, 5-10 years, whatever. If you have that opportunity, you get sort of a sense of renewal, I guess, where you have this sort of a constantly evolving social situation, which I've tried to have, where, you know, constantly making new friends, some people drift away, whatever, which I, you know, I think would be an asset. So it may, you know, if you have the opportunity to make more friends with deep connections, then you're good there.
Here's my question. Would you hide the fact that you are immortal in order to make it easier
to have
friends?
I can't hide from anybody. I'm terrible.
I mean, but would you want to try? I mean, that'd be your defense mechanism, right? Yeah, you'd have forever to figure out how to hide it. So you'll figure out some ways to hide it. Sometimes it won't work, sometimes it won't. But, you know, after you've tried a dozen times, you'll figure out a way to hide that you're immortal. Maybe you get makeup and make yourself look older.
Well, I wouldn't want to spend 10,000 years in a lab, people figuring out how I did it.
That's another thing, too. Yeah. I don't want that, and I also don't want to be a celebrity if I don't want to be.
Right.
I think you legitimately just don't want to be a celebrity, period, in that instance,
well,
right?
Well, the ability to recreate your whole identity and be a different person for a while is a lot harder than it was if you were, say, Duncan MacLeod in Highlander, who could just move to a different village 50 miles away and nobody would know him, and he doesn't need to produce ID. He doesn't have to,
oh,
you know,
the ID.
You don't have to have a driver's license. I mean,
how are you going to have an ID that says you were born like 200 years ago? I mean, people, there's no way to hide it.
Now we're moving into Howard family's territory from Robert Heinlein, which is something he wrote about. It was a genetically segregated group of people, started out in the 19th century, who were bred essentially like cattle to have longer lifespans. And it was successful that by the time the stories take place in this work, this is part of his future history series, these people are living 300 or 400 or 500 years. Well, 100 or 200 years by that point. But then they live longer and longer and longer and have to be segregated from regular society where they don't have that genetic benefit, because it's literally just a genetic benefit. There was, you know, not much technology involved or anything like that.
Why did they have to be separated?
Because they were going to be exterminated otherwise.
Oh.
Because they can live longer. These other people can't.
Is it like, does it create like this like class system where you have like an unfair advantage? Yeah.
Well, this is how they got space travel. So the solution was to just move to a different planet.
Oh, okay.
So this belies another kind of thought experiment that I have pretty often, which is about the idea of fame. So one thing that our sort of culture is now is that we sort of project that fame as a thing is good in and of itself, and it's sort of the highest goal. But there's also the double-edged sword there, which is that, as it turns out, the more fame you have, the more scrutiny you have, the more you lose privacy. You lose the ability to have a sense of self. And so in the idea of the sort of immortal is you kind of have to constantly be in the place where if the society you live in is basically being immortal will be terminal to you in some respect, terminal to you being able to live a free life, you have to stay unfamous, not infamous, unfamous.
Which is why I think doing it alone would suck.
Yeah.
If it's just me, I might pass.
I think if I had, with the exception of including the Kurgan and occasional sword fights, if you had a small population of immortals, it might not be that bad that you get to wander around and occasionally cross paths with somebody that's like you, mm-hmm. who, you know, like you meet Sean Connery or that dude with the scimitar who talks to Duncan MacLeod mm-hmm. in the Central Park for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Where if you don't have to fight people and you occasionally meet them, that might not be bad if you have a bit of continuity in that regard. There's one character that I actually really like and I think kind of belies the whole I'm sad and I walk through eternity being grumpy is the character of Hob Gadling from the series The Sandman by Neil Gaiman, is that he's a character who achieves immortality on essentially a gag that... He is overheard in a bar by Morpheus, you know, the Lord of Dreams, talking about in a bar in like the 1500s or so, talking about how dying is for suckers and how he's never going to do it. And he's clearly had a few at this point. And Dream's sister, Death, overhears that and decides to give him immortality. He just goes, okay, he just won't die. And his whole battle is, when I'm about to die, I just decide not to do it. Nope, not going to do it. And he ends up deciding to meet with Morpheus once every 100 years in the exact same English pub to have a drink and then see where he is and have the opportunity to renew or not renew his immortality every year. And sometimes you meet him, he's a complete penniless like guy who's lost everything and is living out of the gutter and is only allowed to come into the bar because this rich guy, you know, Dream, is sitting there and is willing to pay for his drinks. And other times he's really rich. But every time he decides not to die, he's like, no, that's going to suck for a while, but I've pulled out of this before.
Right.
You know, I can do this.
Well, I mean, that brings up a major question, which is what purpose... I mean, it's a kind of a personal thing, but I think death is kind of stupid.
I do, too.
What... The only positive thing that I think that it does is that sometimes stupid people, you know, horrible people in power die, and then they're no longer in power.
Yes.
Is that fortunately, death prevents a lot of really bloody revolutions. And That's a social benefit. That's basically the only social benefit of death that I can think of. But it's the end of so much narrative, so many stories, so many loved ones gone that it feels stupid to me. And it feels like something, it feels less like a social equalizer and more a disease to be cured.
For me, it just feels like there is inevitably something amazing that I will never get to see because it's going to happen outside of my lifespan.
The fear of missing out.
End of the story.
Yeah, the end of the story.
We're never going to see the end of the story.
Yeah, that there's I think it's a Christopher Hitchens line, the party goes on, but you're asked to leave.
Pretty much.
And I don't want to be asked to leave. It's the same way as imagine what Sir Isaac Newton would feel if he had an opportunity to see the moon landing. That he would have loved that. Same thing, like a Thomas Jefferson would have loved to see.
They'd probably try to have Neil Armstrong burned as a heretic.
Yeah, some of those people. But again, I'm also talking as a person who doesn't want to be a dictator, that I don't really want power. I just don't want to get kicked out of the party. I don't necessarily want to be noticed. I don't want to be the big hero of the story.
Well, if you have infinite time to make your mark on the world...
Yeah, you could try that.
You
could try that for a while.
How does
that
change? Yeah, I mean, how does that change the human lust after power, the human desire to control the rest of the humans? How does that change when you have unlimited time and with which to make your mark on the world? Is all the shortcuts that we have to do to temporal power no longer necessarily have the same value because you've got time to do other things?
Yeah,
It's an incredibly complex question, which is why I don't like to think about personal immortality. I'd have to spend all my time trying to hide. And that doesn't sound like any actual... That sounds like the narrative changes so much that I don't get to enjoy it anymore. So I spend more time thinking about what it would be like if everybody lived a long time.
I I'm thinking in terms of the Highlander rules, or I am a Duncan MacLeod type.
Yeah, not interesting to me.
I think that I would be much more likely to be lazier without the lack of incentive of a lifespan.
Yeah.
But I think I would also, at this point, like right now, I am closing in on 38 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have enough time to become a doctor, even if I suddenly was hit with the bug, to say I want to be the world's greatest surgeon.
Right.
I just don't have the time to get that good while my hands don't shake. And
that time's already passed for me.
Yeah.
I already, like, even in a more in a more obvious way, where I'm only a year older than you. I'm 39 next month. But I already can't solder surface mount components anymore. The skills that I have, I can't use anymore, because now as I get older, my family has a tremor, and I have that tremor. So I can't hold the soldering iron as well as I can. There's just skills that I have that I can't use anymore because they require me to work on something that's very small.
Hmm.
And that's what I mean. My aging is a part of it. If I have to spend 10,000 years being a crypt keeper, that just means...
imagine all the storytelling in the public square. Let's go see the... Okay.
You could be the scary guy in the neighborhood forever.
Not only do I like watching the narrative, but I like participating, too.
Mm-hmm.
And having... which is why sort of the technology, the technological aspect of it, where if I'm technology itself, I can just sort of make robots do things that I want to do. I can even do that now to a lesser extent, but my control would be a little bit more direct. Where, now to go back to something that you were saying before, you would become more lazy. That's a common situation in science fiction. For example, you have Isaac Asimov's The Spacers in the... in the Elijah Bailey spacer novels, where you've got two populations of people. You've got spacers who have high tech, live on other planets. They live a long time. They all want a lot of space. And so there's like 20,000, 100,000 people per planet. They never get sick. They live 300 years. And then you've got clustered humanity who live in domed cities on Earth. And there's like 20 billion of them. They have standard lifespans. They get sick. They basically live just as we do now, just inside all the time. And the whole series of novels are based on, you know, the conflict between those two civilizations.
Yeah. I think I could, with the lack...
And the spacers are really lazy.
Yeah.
They'll do something for 50 years... And they take no risks. Civilization for them, they're around for more stories,
mm-hmm.
but there's less story, less happens. They live 300 years, but a lot less happens in that 300 years as does on Earth.
I honestly think the lot longer but less happening is still preferable. I mean, assuming that the time that you spend is not spent in pain,
right,
or some sort of crippling disability. If you have the Highlander. The Highlander situation where you're more or less fit that's there, you know, of course I'm going to end up choosing that respect. You know, of course that's the one you're going to end up choosing with a goal, though, with a purpose. I think the overarching tie that binds that exists in Highlander, which is I am one of a small number of people that have a shared experience versus I am just one of 10 billion and I have this singular experience that no one will understand me. I'll have to become obsolete, otherwise I'll become too notorious and become an enemy.
Yeah.
Become a villain.
And then you have to star in increasingly less sensical made for TV movies.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there was one called.
That's the biggest curse.
What if Idiocracy happens? You know,
that's one of the few times where I would become the villain. I would not have any choice but to become Lex Luthor of that world.
Fair.
So. For me, one of the big deciding factors would be is if there would be any going back on it. Like, would I be able to revisit this every 500 years or so?
You want the Hobgadling opportunity to renew or say, no, I'd rather die now?
Yes. And in that case, then I would go for it. It's just the idea of permanently making this change where I'm in some ways now separate from... humanity and have to come up with weird ways to keep my friends. Because while it's true that you can keep making new friends, your friends might notice that you're not aging with them. Like, your interests might be affected by physical ability. Although I'm sure if you're the one that's more physically able, you can adapt to their interests.
If I had this kind of immortality that you're talking about, I'd feel honor-bound to figure out how to share it with more people. And that would become my life. Is I'd be, okay, I got this immortality thing going on. How do I share it with other people?
That's the thing that I come back to, is that I never want to be alone.
Right.
The alone thing would make me want to die. The immortality thing wouldn't. If that's the thing with the Highlander thing.
Now we hear about Sartre here if you wanted to.
The Highlander question of you're whittling intentionally this population of people down to one who gets a prize, that after you kill the Kurgan, there really is no reason to kill everyone else because Kurgan is a serial killer.
Yeah.
Everyone else seems pretty cool. That when he meets Sean Connery and he meets the African guy in the park, there's that like brief moment of, we're going to fight? Okay, we're cool.
Yeah.
And once you get past that, they're just like, hey, how's it going? I haven't seen you in a really long time. I would want a small population of people that I could meet into so that I would have somebody I could bounce my, like, just wanting to get shit out of my head at.
Right.
Where they'd go, yeah, I know what that's like to see that, have that same experience. Because I imagine that once you get out of the generation you were born into, that would be the scariest transition of all.
Well, the other thing is, given what I do, you know, the show I do normally, is that this is, and you might, you know, identify with this a little bit, but is... That's the big selling point for a lot of religions, is that, oh, yeah, we gotta get out on this death thing.
Yeah, I'm immortal. Join me, because we can all be immortal, too.
Yeah. And we all get to go live in a fanciful cloud land and, you know, compliment this one guy for the rest of eternity.
That's the thing is, I don't want to live in a cloud land. I think this is awesome enough as it is, and there's so much stuff that I'll never get to do with a regular lifespan.
Lots of versions of religions that believe in an afterlife do believe that this Earth goes on, or you get a new version of Earth and it's basically the same universe.
But only briefly. I mean, most versions of Christianity that I'm familiar with, the meek inherit the Earth, but only for a period of time, and then there's another, and there's the premillennial dispensationalists like that. Do that a lot. There's a couple of other types of names that I can't actually pronounce.
So if I'm going to cast this, because we're pushing this into theological terms. How do we feel about the idea of immortality as a function of what Nietzsche would refer to as eternal recurrence? Well, you have an immortality, but it's an immortality based on the same set of conditions occurring again and again and again. Would that change your perspective on, especially if you had an awareness of the continuity between the again and again and again happening?
Okay, what is this recurrence?
Yeah.
Eternal recurrence was the idea that was the sort of, I think it's the only bit of real cosmology that Nietzsche had. I'm ignorant here, but the main bit of cosmology that Nietzsche had, which is that things that are happening now are destined to happen again in the same way that they are happening. Hence, eternal recurrence. It will recur over and over and over again in the same way.
All of this has happened before. All of this will happen again.
As in the Matrix, yes. Would that be enough to be intolerable for you to say, I'm a sad immortal and I would like to stop this because this is driving me insane?
Well, I think that things happen again in big strokes, but not in small strokes. The details make things different. I think it's easy, and I think reduction, what is the word I'm looking
for? Reductivist?
Reductivist to basically say that... the world is just a continuing cycle and the world is a flat circle or whatever of this that we're going to live the same lives over and over again. Not really. I live a very different life than some villager or peasant living in Germania during the Roman Empire lived.
Right. Well, if you want to get cosmological about it, if we do in fact live in a closed universe with finite number of particles, there's only a set number of interactions with those particles. So at some point... you either get a universe that peters out, like, you know, the
heat death of the universe,
or you get a universe that eventually has to recur because there's only a set number of states that the universe can be in at any given point.
Does your idea about how appealing immortality change whether the universe is deterministic or indeterministic?
Also, do you feel like living 100 trillion years?
If these things are repeating themselves on a large enough scale, because there's still a lot of things that can happen. Mm-hmm. It would be a long time before it repeats itself.
Here's what would fascinate me. So humanity dies out like a billion years from now. You're like this immortal person. We'll give you a buddy too. You get a buddy.
And I get to wander the stars.
And you get to wander the stars. And then the universe like implodes on itself and explodes again. And you wait billions and billions and billions of years for another intelligent creature to come along. We'll say somehow it ends up looking like humans again. And then you can participate in humanity for a while, and then you do it again. I mean, at some point, you have these long stretches where you and your buddy want to kill each other because you've only got each other to talk to.
There's still a very anthropocentric way in which we're viewing about this, because
I was about to. Yeah.
How would your sense of a billion years go by if you did not have a corporeal body and you just had to wait until your molecules reorganized again?
Well, I was going to take
that place,
that finite state of the universe, and shrink it down just to your brain. You know, you have only a certain number of trillion or whatever, I don't know, so how many atoms that exist in your brain, how many neurons, how many configurations of those neurons are you going to be able to experience? Like, eventually, you'll just start thinking the same thing over and over and over again. And that might be what Nietzsche was getting at when he was talking about, you know, where when you're talking about recurrence, is there will come a point where nothing new under the sun will have some very specific meaning for you, where you are literally incapable of thinking different thoughts because you've thought them all.
But here's the other question. If we're talking with a very human idea of memory, I could get that experience of relearning it all over again, and it could be new again.
Okay.
I could forget way... I've experienced.
I love the idea of selective brain damage.
I love
that idea.
So selfish newness, then. You don't, yeah. If you keep forgetting... So at some point, growth is just going to stop, and you're not going to have a purpose.
Yeah. I mean, who among us here would say no to the idea that you could have the eternal sunshine of the spotless mind, a selective memory deletion?
It's not as much fun as it sounds. Without getting into details, it's really, no.
Are you from the future, Sam?
I mean, not just selective, and not just in terms of like actual brain damage, but
like,
I can...
Would you want to read your favorite book again without knowing anything about it?
If it had been...
Make yourself forget.
I totally could.
Yeah.
And I might not be my favorite book when I read it again, because I could have forgotten the whole thing. My experiences are all different because I'm experiencing them as a different person with a different set of remembered experiences.
Isn't that what we have right now? Huh? Because you're going
to... But I never get to be fresh again.
I'm just saying, because people die, their molecules get reorganized, sometimes to be parts of new people who have no memory, and it's a new experience.
But I mean, I could
live... But there's no connection.
I could live long enough that I could forget all of the movies that I have ever watched and rewatch them again, or if I see something that is a retread of it, it could be new again.
But if we're talking about unbounded immortality, where you can't be killed and you get to live forever... I really have to go to these extreme situations where, you could spend 20 years adrift at sea with no technology and literally nothing to do because your ship sunk, everything else sunk, and you're still alive. Mm. You could spend untold eons floating between planets because your spaceship exploded. I mean, there's a lot of...
Ooh, that would suck.
An unbounded...
Spinning an orbit around just one planet because you can't, like...
Right.
You can't fart strong enough to get the propulsion.
And eventually you run out of fart.
Yes, true.
I mean, eventually your digestive system would have to shut down because there's nothing to digest. Yeah. An unbounded immortality sounds like a really great way to be tortured for longer than humanity has been in existence. Now, if you want to get into like some sort of bounded immortality, that's a different conversation.
Well, let's give Hobgadling rules that every 100 years you have the ability to renew or not.
Right, that'd be fine.
I've never yet...
I might go 3 or 4 centuries before I get bored.
I wonder if you could get bored. That's the question. Is I know you well enough, Sam, to know that you are interested in things.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're interested in learning things. And the things that we all learn create new questions. And I think that I would...
Well, what happens when you're racist old grandpa times 10?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing, is maybe I'm just too embarrassing to keep living.
Do you wonder, though, if racist old grandpa... He gets hardened into racist old grandpa.
Yeah.
Because of physical aging of both his brain and himself, latching onto things that he learned when he was young. But if he stays young forever, he could change his mind.
That's true.
I think you could. I think sometimes the physical changes of the brain and the body kind of hammer you into that time.
The devil is in the details on this one. I need to know specifically what kind of immortality are we talking about before I sign up for it?
Okay. Hobgadling rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, you would need to have, like, your vocabulary be able to adapt, because I think I read old books sometimes, and that mm-hmm. how many words are in there that are, like, harmless words at the time, but today, like would be almost universally recognized. You don't say that. Thanksgiving table, we can't say that word. And so it's like you have to be flexible enough so you don't end up feeling like the racist old grandpa, I guess.
I have to wonder if physical aging plays a part in that, because I know people who are in their 30s who were like Klans members and stuff.
Well, that's different.
That's different than like what I'm talking about is more like people perceiving you as racist just because you haven't changed your language. Just like people might perceive some of these old works of literature as racist because they use certain words.
I think you would sort of naturally change. I think a lot of our language, though,
it could
is probably
be a very painful process, though.
It totally could. Yeah. I'm not going to pretend it wouldn't be sometimes, but I think sometimes those changes happen kind of gradually. There's words that I used to casually use that I would never use now.
Mm-hmm.
And it never happened in this big hard moment of somebody forcing it down my throat.
Right.
It was sort of like it sort of slowly dawns on you and you're like, oh, and then it just kind of fades away. And I think that, I think that even like, say, a Klan member, if he was an immortal, one of these immortal members is some racist guy who was born in the 20s, let's say. I think that if he stayed physically 30 and had the mindset of a physically 30 person, because I think sometimes when you try to grab onto youth, that's the idea of trying to create new friendships again, Sam.
The Immortal Klansman, a new novel by Mike Gillis.
Yes. But, I mean, you're grabbing onto everything from when you were young, including your friends, including ideas. I think that if you're in that mindset of always being young, you can make changes. I'm a different person than I was when I was 20. But I imagine that as you get older, those changes become more and more tiny and incremental rather than big
and
sweeping.
See, this is a big one to have. I was a little surprised to sit down to this one because that goes into the nature of identity, where you think you're the same person that you were 10 years ago. I don't think you are, and I don't think I was. Is I think we're literally, by most stretches, there's a lot of similarity between the two, but I'm not the same person I was. And that's why the uploading thing doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you. Is you don't like the uploading idea.
I
don't.
Because
it means your biological self dies. Because that identity ends.
Well,
but that's why I say it doesn't bother me quite as much, because I already feel like that I don't have continuity of identity.
It's change the brush, change the handle sort of thing?
Pretty much. Ship of Theseus.
Yeah. I think for me it kind of comes down to the fact that I don't believe in a soul.
Right.
That if it existed in the way that it does in like a comic book where you can swap brains with somebody Freaky Friday style, and that it's sort of you there and this person is now in your body, that there's a you outside of a physical form, then I would be much more of a transhumanist.
Yeah, see, I don't believe in a soul, but I do believe in software.
Yeah, but if I can... But if it's a situation where I can create a version of myself without destroying my physical self to create that one.
Sure.
Is that other one me? Or is it just a simulation of me? It's an
interesting point, because you can upload files on computers without deleting the old one. So you could upload that new consciousness. It's just weird because if the old you is still here, then I don't know. It just doesn't seem like the new you can possibly be you.
I have a set protocol for what I do if I meet myself.
Mm.
Like, I've already figured this out.
Are you guys going to fight?
No, I want to know what it is.
Nope. No, it's how I authenticate whether or not it's me.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you can't share it with people.
No, I'm not going to share it with people. Okay. I already have a protocol.
I have
a
something.
Sam Mulvey Voigtkampf test. Is that what we're talking about?
Pretty much. Yeah.
I actually have some tests too, just in case I ever if I ever come across someone that claims to have like psychic powers or anything like that, I have some tests that I'm like, okay, I can't tell anybody what the tests are because the test is figuring out what the test is, so I
right.
I can't tell anybody.
I'll be honest with you, a massive amount of it is just avoiding each other to skip the embarrassment.
Yeah,
because I've already lived with somebody with the same name. for a good chunk of my life.
That's right.
So I have a sense of what that's like. So to avoid embarrassment, stay the hell away from each other.
This kind of reminds me there was a comic book that came out in the early 2000s, this comic book called Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Starring the Marvel version, the Marvel Comics version of Captain Marvel, his son.
Marvel.
What? He's an alien.
Is that French?
Yeah. Actually, it's Cree.
Marvel.
He's M-A-R.
He's mainly copyright infringement avoidant.
Yeah.
Oh.
M-A-R-V-E-L-L. So he's an alien. Anyways, this comic was about his son, and what he did is... he achieves this sort of cosmic consciousness and decides to force everyone in existence to meet both a younger and older version of themselves to pop in. And the fun thing with Marvel is that there are older and newer incarnations of characters that they have to encounter. And, of course, he doesn't realize that he accidentally did the same thing for himself. So he has to encounter two versions of himself, one when he was pre-crazy and another one when he was a drunken reprobate when he was first created. So he has to encounter both of those. But what I love is that there's this this sort of implied crazy opposition that you would have with other versions of yourself. Like, oh my God, I'm going to fight and argue with old versions of myself. But my favorite moment in that entire series is... the one that happens to Ben Grimm, you know, the Thing from the Fantastic Four, where he meets two younger versions of himself, the pre-Thing version and another rockier Thing version, and they're just sitting around a table playing cards. That they all get along with each other perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And I just thought that that was a nice alternative, that not everyone is going to be having some sort of existential crisis. Someone is like, oh, hey, it's a guy who has all the same tastes as me.
So it might be a hack, but I get out of it by thinking I don't really have continuity of identity now. I have downtimes where I'm asleep or unconscious for other reasons. You know, the actual matter of my body has changed several times over the course of my lifetime. I don't have the continuity of identity that I think I do.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's true, is it really that big of a step from tiny human to adult human to machine human? And I don't think it is. And that's kind of where, but I realize I'm in the significant minority in that response, is that there are even transhumanists who have trouble with continuity of identity.
I'd have to not know when the change happens. Because I don't remember almost anything from when I was younger than, like, 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
There's no memory of it. I mean, I have a memory of... my oldest memory, I honestly think, is waking up early in the morning before my mom woke up, before my sister woke up, walking into the kitchen and seeing a gravy boat and thinking that was chocolate in there and drinking it and being horrified.
Was it gravy?
It was gravy. Oh. It was cold gravy. And it was from the last night's dinner. And for me, brown meant chocolate, which this is a much better way for me to learn this lesson than a lot of other things that could have happened. But I remember that, but I don't remember anything prior to that. And there's years of life in that where I probably had bigger changes in my life from 0 to 3. Like, hey, I can use my hands now.
Yeah, and there's stuff that in that terra incognita that helped define you as a person, that helped establish your identity. It's there. You may not remember it, but it created, you know, neural weightings in your brain and stuff like that while your brain was in an early developmental phase. So you may not remember it, but it left its imprint on you.
But if I continue as a...
So what... And to me, that's like really important to the continuity of identity. I don't remember things that help make me me.
Hmm.
Do I really have the continuity of identity that I think I do? I don't think so.
I know I don't.
Right.
But at the same time, when I know that this is a changeover, that I'm about to die, and this thing that acts like me is going to continue, that would terrify me.
Well, I'm not saying it's not scary.
Yeah, it's like the Arnold Rimmer thing. I think one of the first lines that Arnold Rimmer has on an episode of Red Dwarf, which is he just straight up goes, this isn't even me. This is a simulation of me.
Right.
I died back then. I'm that pile of ash over there. And that you get to try to figure out what the new me is. Actually, Alan Moore's Swamp Thing had this very early on where... the initial creation of Swamp Thing was that he was a scientist who got into an accident and became a swamp monster. What Alan Moore's story did is kind of turn that on its head, and he learns that, no, that scientist died in that explosion, and you are the swamp and that chemical's best attempt to make a human
right.
with those memories. And that's why you have organs that don't actually do anything, because it tried to recreate lungs, even though you technically don't need to breathe.
Wow, that's freaky.
You don't, your brain doesn't really do anything. You're a consciousness that floats in a plant.
Right.
And he, of course, goes catatonic and freaks out. And after a day or so or two of being in a coma, he comes out and goes, I think I'm okay now. And now he has to figure out who he is. But he'd still kind of appreciate it if you called him Alec Holland.
Right.
And that's kind of what I think would sort of happen if I knew where that changeover happened. But the question of whether you're really you, that is kind of terrifying.
And then there's a whole bunch of, I mean, you just as a lark picked a subject that I've spent a lot of time thinking about is, you know, because the concept of immortality in this way ties directly into humanity. It ties directly into civilization. So I spent some significant amount of time thinking about it because it's also a popular trope in science fiction. But it raises, you know, physiological questions like how much of our identity and how much of who we are is tied to the sort of the architecture that our minds are running on. Would I think the same thing, the same things? Would I respond in the same ways if I were running on transistors rather than neurons?
Hmm.
Even if those transistors were designed to emulate what a neuron does. You know, I'm an atheist. I'm a humanist. I'm also a strict materialist. I think strong AI is possible because I believe essentially we are strong AI.
Hmm.
You know, everything that happens with us is a physical and biological, you know, is a physical process that happens with the same stuff that can be made to do, in, you know, with other materials. And with that comes a lot of interesting questions, and like a lot of the decisions I've made about cosmology and religion and personal identity and all that stuff kind of have their headwaters in conversations like this one and in reading books about this subject. So this is pretty core to this sort of thing, believe it or not, is fairly definitional in how I live my life.
I think that's basically the same for me, is that I'm also an atheist. I'm not somebody who has a holy book that tells me what the purpose of this or that is, or gives me a cosmology that it wants to impart on me to shape these things. But that doesn't mean I don't draw from mythology. I just draw from countless fictional mythologies. I go into something knowing that I'm dealing with a hypothetical rather than a real thing, that these are rules that I don't think apply to the universe.
I take concepts from fiction knowing that they are fiction.
Yes. It isn't like I have a book that I think has true cosmological things in it. It's like I probably have learned more about morality and how somebody should handle power from Superman than I have from any nonfiction source.
Hmm.
From any book of philosophy.
That's interesting, because I think Superman is irresponsible with his power.
See, there we go. That's a discussion I like having. Yeah. I like using that as a beginning point. But
remember earlier, Mike, when we were talking about how there's always the books that are the blank of blank, the science of Superman, the morality of Star Trek, you know, and so on and so forth. You could do a podcast series on like morality from, like, or have it just.
Well, you're
going to
get
know.
This full on in the face when we start talking about Dune.
Yeah, see?
Because Dune's interesting in that it's not a world I'd ever want to live in. Mm-hmm. It's actually a world that I actively detest. But it explains, it's interesting in other ways.
Yeah.
It's not an aspirational thing, but it's still interesting.
Most of my favorite fictional worlds are places I would never want to live.
Right.
My favorite sci-fi franchise is Planet of the Apes. You know what I really don't want to do with my life? Live, wear a loincloth, and be chased by gorillas with rifles. That sucks.
That's a very specific fetish.
Yeah. I bet you somebody would have to pay. You'd have to pay thousands of dollars to the right kind of people to act that out for you. You know what? I just really need a big hairy guy to throw a net on me.
Yeah.
Well, that's not too far from what some people do.
Yeah. I just don't want to be lobotomized at the end of it.
It is possible, Mike. It is possible. You can, yeah.
It's like, you know what? I can find a rich guy who will want to hunt me. It's not that hard.
No, but to keep you alive at the end of it, that might be extra.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But if you're immortal,
he can hunt me forever. Well, until he dies. He can't Elmer Fudd me into eternity.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd get the last laugh.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so I'd probably go for it, I guess. But I'd have a lot of it. I'd probably go for it because of the opportunity, but the costs may make it a lot less fun than I think is basically how I'd answer that question.
Yeah, me too. Even after that discussion about floating infinitely between stars and possibly being bored forever, I'd like to think that I would probably just go to sleep for a really long time and wake up crashing on a planet and going, where the fuck am I now?
Yeah.
What you could do is invent something that sends you into hibernation or something, you know, make some inventions for all of the...
I have all the time in the world to build this thing and get it to work.
Yeah, like I said, there's a lot more costs involved with immortality than we think, especially the unbounded kind you're talking about.
Yeah, I just don't think it'll be sad, mopey guy. I think you can find things to make you happy.
No, I don't think it'd be sad and mopey. I think it'd be bored.
Yeah.
I think boredom would overtake everything else.
I think it could. But, you know, I wonder if sometimes people get scared of that out of a lack of imagination sometimes. I mean, I'm also talking about this thinking it from the scale of somebody whose internal sense of time says 100 years is a long time.
Right.
So, I mean, I get bored if I don't have something to read while waiting at the dentist.
Right.
So, I don't know. Maybe my perception of time would change from living that long.
It would have to.
And then everyone else is just moving too fast.
I mean, my perception of time your perception of, all of our perceptions of time have already changed. Remember, let's say 5 to 15.
Yeah.
And you remember how long a period of that was?
Yeah.
Well, how about 25 to 35? How long did that take comparatively?
Nothing.
Our perceptions of time are already changing.
Remember when summer vacation felt like a really long time?
Yeah, I've been on summer vacation for about 5 years now. So, yeah, it takes a long time.
See, imagine if you could do that forever.
Yeah, I quit my last job.
Oh. Radio vs. the Martians is produced by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. Our editor was Mike Gillis. Our theme music was written and performed by Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Find us online at radioversusthemartians.com and send us your feedback at info@radioversusthemartians.com. There's no chance for us.